Chris Miles was able to retire twice by the time he was 39 years old. But he's not content to just enjoy his own financial freedom and peace of mind. Chris wants you to have your own ripple effect so you can live free today. He's not the financial advisor you expected. He's the anti-financial advisor you deserve. He's jumping behind the mic right now, ready to make waves. Here's Chris Miles.
Hello, my fellow Ripplers. This is Chris Miles, your cash flow expert and anti-financial advisor. Hey, welcome to this show that's for you and about you, those who work so hard for your money, and you want your money to start working harder for you now. You want that freedom, that cash flow, the prosperity today, not 30 or 40 years from now, but right now. So you live that life that you love, doing what you love with those you love. And most importantly, guys, it's about living that life of meaning and purpose, creating a ripple effect for the lives of others. And guys, thank you so much for allowing me to do that in your life, allowing me to be able to teach you guys and be able to share and smack microphones because I get so excited about it, guys. So thank you so much. Appreciate you guys being here. Thank you for binging and sharing and all that you do. As a reminder, check out our website, moneyripples.com. You know, there's a great ebook on there, Beyond Rice and Beans, you can download for free today, so check it out. Hey, how amazing would it be if you could create monthly cash flow, passive income, from making at least double-digit returns on your money? And get this, it's only $1,000 or more that you need to invest. Guys, that's exactly what Secured Investment Corp does. They actually do short-term lending to real estate investors that's backed by real estate that you can actually reach double-digit returns on. That means 10% or better. It's also IRA friendly, and you can even reinvest those monthly distributions to create compound interest on your money too. So guys, if you want to learn more about that, go check out securedinvestmentcorp.com. That's secured, S-E-C-U-R-E-D, investmentcorp.com. Okay, guys, so today I've got, as by popular demand, my beautiful wife. And no, we did not plan to match today, even though we got similar color shirts on. But that's just how it goes in the Miles Boucher household sometimes.
Yeah,
but
great colors because we're all about whining.
Wow. Okay. Pun.
Wine.
Yes, we got it. All right. So anyways, I'm bringing back my wife, Adise Boucher, because I know a lot of you guys really got a ton out of the things that she taught last time. We talked a lot about your backstory, you know, where you came from Venezuela, you emigrated here to the United States, basically came out of poverty and into prosperity, you know, and now you teach others to do the same thing. And so I know the one thing that people keep asking of us, whether it's in person or I've had other podcast hosts say, can you bring your wife on? That'd be great. I'd love to hear her perspective on all this because, Chris, we already know what you think, but what does she really think? So I want to talk to really bring up the conversation to you guys about how do we work together? Because she's an entrepreneur. I'm an entrepreneur. She likes to run the money. I like to run the money. So obviously there's a lot of potential for conflict. And so we kind of want to be real and kind of raw about this a little bit. I don't think we have to get like nasty, you know, we don't go that far, but definitely at least to be able to really share what we've learned, both the good and the bad lessons from that. So anyways, Adise, welcome to our show. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks. The traffic was bad on the way here.
I'm sure.
Thanks for having me.
I know you have to dodge kids and get into our office.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, like, tell us a bit about your background, how you learned about money initially.
Long story short, I think it's just my dad was willing to teach me when I was little. Some people keep money as an adult-only conversation, mm-hmm. and my dad instead would share principles that he was reading about or he was implementing or what we were facing. And so I was aware of money early on, and I got to watch by example what he learned and as he prospered. And then when I was an adult, I had to apply the things I had learned as a youth. And so experience, I guess.
Yeah. And you kind of, I feel like you had an advantage over a lot of people because a lot of people, they don't talk about money with their kids, right? It's like a mm-hmm. taboo subject. Mm-hmm. They don't even like talking about it with each other as spouse, husband and wife, right? Mm-hmm. So what was different in your household growing up, you know, like with your dad? Like you said, he talked about money with you guys. Did he talk about money with his wife too? And
we all talked about money because we were struggling with it. So
we have so little of it. You talk about it all the time.
You talk about it more.
But see, you could have came out of that like thinking like there's always lack, like there's a lot of scarcity. How were you able to turn that scarcity conversation around for you?
Because my dad modeled speaking about possibility that scarcity was temporary, that being broke was temporary, and there's things we could do to influence what we experienced and how much we earned. So
So you basically had the rich dad in some way, shape,
yeah,
or form.
Yeah, I had the broke rich dad.
The broke rich dad. Well, even the rich dad, you remember some of the other stories, he was broke too. Yeah. Like, because Robert Kiyosaki's dad was more wealthy at one point than the rich dad was, but then it flip-flopped where he got hotels and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And see, I kind of had the poor dad. He wasn't broke, right? Like he was
true.
He had a decent wage for a time until inflation caught up to him, and then he was like losing.
But he had the old world thinking about money.
He did. He believed you would work forever for, you know, 40 years for the same company. And then he was shocked, of course, when they laid him off, you know, and that caused like a stroke and a lot of health issues for him. You know, so a lot of that stuff happened. But I was taught, you know, get good grades, go to school, work hard, go to college, because you want to be the first guy to go to college. Mm-hmm. So then you can actually make something of yourself. And I know that was definitely a different environment than what you were raised in.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts about that when you hear people say, hey, you just need to get good grades? Or even like some of my kids come back from public school, especially, right? And they're like, I got to get good grades. I got to get the best colleges. I got to get the best job so I can do something, you know, right? Like what's your response to that?
I guess what triggers me when somebody says that you can make something of yourself, like you're nothing before that, you know? I mean, we especially in the United States, we have a lot of examples of even children who are entrepreneurs who create movements through profit making and for nonprofits. So you're telling me that they can't do anything until, and also, I guess for me, it also triggers the first financial class that I taught, that one of my students, he had struggled all his life and his wife had fought about money all this time. They always struggled. And towards the end of the class, they realized like, oh, if he does what he loves, we'll actually be okay. But the thing is that he died 2 weeks later, and it's like, why wait? You don't have any guarantees. For me, that was a wake up call. It's like, why wait?
Why
to make something of yourself, something that you already are. And I believe that everybody inherently has gifts and talents and passions that were programmed in you already. Some of us look at it as pre-designed divinely, that we can just come here, and we're not designed to fail. We're not designed to struggle. We're not designed to be depressed. We're designed to whatever we have is make the most of that. And then if you just enjoy the person that you are and you're expressing who you are, then you experience happiness and prosperity. People throw money at people who look like they're having fun or they're enjoying what they're doing. I mean, be it somebody on the streets, you know, the drumming on the buckets, if they're looking like they're having a good time, they're getting better tips than the guy who just looks like he's just like out there, gotta make the money, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you see even like in wealthy groups that people enjoy more being with the one who's jovial, looking like he's having fun and enjoying what he's doing. And he feels, you know, some sort of purpose in what he's doing than the person who feels like, gotta grind, I'm busy, 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 you know? So anyways, I guess that's a long way of saying that you don't have to wait to make something of yourself. You just got to be comfortable with who you are and then just express that.
Well, really, you're talking about like really coming in with your talents and your passions, right? Like into life and doing those things, because that will amplify and increase the amount of money you earn. Because like you said, nobody wants to pay. It's like going to Walmart and you see some of those people checking out, and I mean, not checking you out. I mean, they're checking me out, but they're checking your groceries out.
Yeah.
And you can tell when they don't want to be there, and you're like, ooh, how fast can I get out of this line? Right.
Yeah.
Compared to the person that's just like, hey, it's a lovely day, you know, which you don't see at Walmart.
How's your day, sugar? But
I'm the big smiley face.
Yeah. But something you said, and I don't know if you're going to want me to mention this, but I'm doing it. So you have a rebel guest. No, you said that if you're doing like your passions and things like that, then you make more money. But it isn't just about money, because money or compensation is different for everybody.
Yeah.
So sometimes money is the thing that gets you the thing you want, but sometimes you can bypass money and just get to the thing you want. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of why my company is New Money Mama, because I think we're getting to a point, we're going to have to redefine what money or currency or compensation is, and there'll be the new money. And it starts first with individually you figuring out what is it that you want. You might say, well, I need more money. I want more money. Of course I want more money. Mm-hmm. Well, for what? Well, I just don't want to work so much. I want to spend time with my kids. We haven't taken a vacation in 7 years, you know, and they're growing up. Okay, well then stop chasing the money and start aligning yourself to be at work less and actually spend more time with your kids. That might mean that you have to reduce some of the spendy you're doing. It might mean that you have to have the courage to ask for a raise. It might mean that you actually have to restructure your pricing. It might mean that you actually start saying yes to your kids more to spend time with you when you are home. And then little by little, everything in your space starts to shift into the currency that you want, the new money that you want, which is time freedom with your children. That's just one example. Everybody has their own currency. My child, when she was two, I've had my kids doing chores since they could walk. And the way that she got paid, she didn't care about money when she was that old. She wanted books. So her money was books. And that was why she did anything at all. She wanted mom to read books, right? And so for you, it might not be books, although I know some adults who are, that's their thing. But I think the first thing to prosperity is to actually define clearly what is prosperity for you. Not what your neighbors say prosperity is, not what the New York Times says, not what your parents say prosperity is. It's and not even what culturally, what ads you're seeing, what car you should drive and where you should live. But it's like, if I sat back and I could design the world for me, what is prosperity for me? Is it produce? A lot of people complain that organic food is so expensive. Well, is that expensive to you? Figure out how to, if that is part of your prosperity, you know? Anyways, that's my rant.
Yeah. Now this can obviously, this kind of thinking you're talking about here, you're opening up a whole can of worms that could really create some issues for people, especially if, if right now somebody's listening is the one spouse and the other spouse doesn't listen to this kind of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't think this kind of way. They might think, hey, you just do that stable, secure job, just do what you need to do, right? Yeah. And you're talking about blowing this whole thing up, just turning on its head, like, well, maybe I'm not going to do that secure job. Maybe I'm going to do what I love. You know, maybe I'm going to do something that gives me that personal fulfillment currency. Mm-hmm. When this starts to create this like divide, especially in relationships, what do they do?
I think a divide happens a lot when the conversation is about the thing instead of about honoring that you love each other. Mm-hmm. So sometimes people say to me, well, my husband won't let me do this in my business, or my husband or my wife won't, well, she'll die if she sees how much I invest in whatever. It's not really a conversation about the money. It's a conversation about the relationship. And a lot of people don't want to hear that because relationships are messy, right? Because you get triggered, they have their triggers, and then you're putting two people who have landmines all over themselves, you know?
Completely different pasts.
Yeah, you know, past experiences. So I actually don't think that thinking prosperously is a divide in a relationship. I feel like it's a personal thing first. Because, okay, you and I see this, especially in social media, like women will say, well, how do I get my husband to think prosperous like me? It's like, well, you have to think prosperously.
How they get him on the same page, or how they get him up on my level.
You don't force somebody. This is the okay, it's just like money. Prosperity doesn't make money happen. You don't go make money do what you want it to do. That's not prosperity. Prosperity is like lining up, being clear about what you want and who you are, and seeing if those are aligned. And then it just comes. It comes to you. People are attracted to you. Contracts come easier to you. Customers like you, and they go, well, I just like them. So I said yes. So that's the same thing with relationships. You don't make your spouse get on the same page. You line up to what it is that you believe, and it creates peace for you because now you're finally in congruence with your dreams. And then that peace impacts the relationship.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. But I'm gonna put a butt here, right? I'm gonna throw a curve because
you like butts.
Because how many times have we seen couples where the other spouse, they see maybe the one spouse getting happy, but then their spouse does not feel happy because they're not in congruence, right? They're not aligned, and so they start to resent the spouse that's becoming aligned.
Yeah.
What do they do?
Okay, so it depends. Do you love that person or not? Let's say you're the resistant one, right? And I have to decide, do I love this person? Do I care about this relationship? And then that determines your approach. If you don't care about that person, chances are you're like, that's their problem. See ya, right? Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but if you love that person, you're like, honey, I love you so much. But then find out where that insecurity is coming from. Like, you're not there to fix the other person, but you're there to be a safe place for them to express where that pain is coming from, where that fear, that resentment is coming from. And most times it's something that they're afraid of. It could be the resentment that you're, if you become successful, then I don't feel like I'm the type of spouse that represents the kind of, you know what I mean? So I saw this with my mother. As the more successful my dad became, the more insecure she became about who she was.
Yeah.
Because she's like, well, I'm not that fancy rich woman. She just thought she had to act like, I don't know, the movies.
She'll get dolled up and I start doing the Charleston and all that kind of stuff, right?
Okay, I don't know which movie that was.
I guess I'm seeing something with Leonardo DiCaprio in it or something. I don't know.
All right. Anyways, I'll just say. So sometimes it can just hit an insecurity of they think that they have to become something they're not. Sometimes it can be an insecurity that they think that if you might not think they're good enough, and so you're going to leave them behind. There's a million really fears that it can come up, the way that it can come up. So it depends first on if you love that person, you want the relationship to work, and how you approach it. And you approach it tenderly. You don't say, you don't think of them like, you're lesser than me, and hopefully you'll catch up to me. I'm so patient and loving with you. No, you
about
just,
time.
Yeah, you know, but you just like love them. And you're like, you don't expect them to do anything except go on their journey. Mm-hmm. You know, assuming they want to be a better version of themselves, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
They might be want to be a better knitter. And knit blankets, let them be that. The whole reason you're an entrepreneur or that you're wanting to align with prosperity is because you want the freedom to be who you are. So you just want to confirm to the other person they have the freedom to be who they are and that you don't have to be the same, you know? Yeah.
And that's if the person will take it, because well, a lot of times they got...
Sometimes it takes years for somebody to get to that point.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter. You decide if you love them or not. Why did you marry them? Was it because you were hoping to have an entrepreneurial wife? Or did you marry them because you love how you laugh together? You love how you felt together? You love just spending
time? How you wear purple together?
Yes, color coordinating your clothes together. So it really has nothing to do with money, but it influences everything about money.
That's for sure.
So,
absolutely.
I don't know if I answered your question, but...
You answered
the sound of my voice
more.
Was glorious. So
you're like, I just want to keep hearing it. You know, I love it. Okay. Well, let's kind of switch gears, right? Like a little bit here.
Yeah.
So give them a view into our household.
Which part?
That's true. There's actually a consultant said, hey, based on what I know about your personalities, I would love to see you fight just to have front row tickets. Like it would get bloody. I know that it would get loud, but I wonder how it is. So, yeah. I mean, it does have to be about everything better. Of our relationship, you know, we can keep some things, you know, a little bit more discreet.
Yeah, but what part is it that people want to hear about?
Let's talk about like how we were together, like as a couple, you know, and how we haven't worked together. Even, like, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly of like, especially around money or business or whatever it might be. Because, I mean, obviously you've had your business,
yeah.
I've had my business, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So how has that worked? You know, now we've been married like 4.5 years.
Okay, so when we got engaged, people who knew us on an individual like business basis, we're like, oh my gosh, a power couple. They're going to work so amazing. They're going to create something amazing together. And I think at least I did fall into some of that expectation.
The romanticism of it.
Yeah, the romanticism of it. And when we held our first joint event, I think it was a 4 or 8 week class. I don't know. But
no, we did a live event together that we did.
Yes.
It was a live event.
Oh my gosh. I forgot about that one. See, you just blocked out.
I didn't.
You block out the trauma. So the thing
I'm still going to counseling over that one.
We realized that we're two chiefs. Mm-hmm. And so we don't really work great together. And I'm more enlightened. And so, no. So. Wow.
That was a very unenlightened thing to say.
No, but I'm just saying, like, we just have different ways of learning how to work together. And part of the challenge was that the basis of the material was yours initially.
Mm-hmm.
But the way we were presenting it was from my perspective, and then it was hard to see your baby change.
Yeah.
So you kind of have
we're both highly independent people.
Yeah. So what you have to create something completely different together, right? Mm-hmm. And so we thought, okay, let's try this again. And the last time we worked together in a joint event, it was 4 or 8 week class, but it doesn't matter because halfway through we were like done working with each other. We did not want to do it. And it was such a breath of fresh air just to like be done and be like, I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I have found that the best way we have worked in together is when I'm working with a client and I bring your expertise in, or you're holding an event and then you bring my expertise in.
Absolutely.
As a guest.
Right.
Not as co-collaborators.
Yeah. Or we have each of our individual things that we're in charge of, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. Because looking back at that event, I mean, I realized, you know, it was actually going great.
the first one?
Yeah. But it was so different than what was in my head. And for me to change on a whim like that in the middle of an event was like, whoa, what? I'm getting whiplash right now.
Yeah.
No, we cannot change it right now.
You went through like a little breakdown.
I did. Right during a lunch break.
Yeah, I was there. Luckily, we had a third person involved in the event, so she and I were trying to calm you down, but that was really hard for you. So.
Yeah, but again, it wasn't about me, it was about the experience, you know? But
it
was having to break that ego and that expectation that I had too, which has kind of been true about everything in our relationship, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the kitchen. Our biggest fighting has been in the kitchen because...
Because it's hot.
It's so hot. But anyway, so no, because we both were used to like cooking and certain styles of food. And so working together was like too much salt, not enough salt kind of thing. And finally like, get out of the kitchen or you spend the... So he actually does most of the cooking now. But when I really need to do that creative thing in the kitchen, I say, I'm making this.
Get out.
Yeah. Or like he'll be my sous chef. He'll say, what can I do to help you?
That took me about 4.5 years to learn.
Yeah, to just learn to say, like, what can I do?
Yeah.
So I think that applies in business too. Mm-hmm. It's like when you're working on something together, or even when it's like he has his clients come to our house twice a year. And so I had to learn the very first time, like step back and like stop telling them how to do it more efficiently or more practical or a better price, you know, and just be like, okay, what do you need? And then I just show up, do my tap dance, and then I leave.
Which she's amazing at tap dance, right? I gotta tell you.
Like, yes.
It's like she's got 4 left tapped shoes. You know? Okay.
And so I'm in charge of the joke telling.
Apparently, yeah. That one did not land the way I expected.
So what else do they want to know?
Well, like how I deal with money. Like communicating with about money. Because I know a lot of couples I've worked with, like that's even... Some people I've known for 10 years, that is still a struggle. Like
that's normal.
A huge source of contention.
Mm-hmm.
And what will often happen is when there's that kind of contention, usually somebody will back off and one will just take over and the other one will just go in the fall in the background. But they're not really working as a partnership.
Yeah.
It's like you handle it, you deal with it, or maybe somebody just doesn't want to deal with it at all. It's like, I want to think about investments. You handle all the investments. You just do whatever you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
That does not fly in our relationship.
Nope.
I know that for a fact.
You know.
Because I actually was married to somebody who was like, you handle it. I can't handle the stress of dealing with the money.
Mm-hmm.
But then you were dealing with the money because your last spouse didn't do that either. He was kind of stepped back.
Cool.
My spouse stepped back. So we're both like alphas, so to speak.
Yeah.
Notice, banging my fist together here for those of you who can't see what
you
I'm doing.
You should create a thumbnail for this video that's of us face to face. You know, like. Yeah.
She's more like McGregor. I'm more like. You know, Glass Joe from Mike Tyson's Punch Out. So how do you get people to get on that same page, especially with that relationship where they're trying to preserve the relationship? One person might be, well, it could be both people in charge or nobody wants to be in charge. There's all these dynamics. How does someone be able to work together?
Us or others? What I've seen with other people or with
you
us.
Can start with us and how we did it, but then talk about others too.
Well, we fought a lot. So like,
noticing a pattern here.
Yeah. But I think that was like, we didn't fight about money a lot. It was when we actually sat down to look at the money and I'm like, you did what? You know, because he was used to making these lone wolf decisions. I don't know if I mentioned it in the last interview, but it's like when you and I were going in the car to go somewhere and you're like, oh, should I bring my car? And I'm like, why? And he's like, well, in case I sell my car and buy another car. I'm like, what? And he's like, well, I already have an appointment. And so he was just used to doing that on his own. And I'm like, we're married. So now we need to like kind of talk about buying a car.
I'm making the money. So why shouldn't I?
Oh,
you
know? Yeah.
Like, you know,
yeah,
that
he was the only
thing.
One making the money. And so.
Right.
And so, but here's the thing. A little tangent right now. Mm-hmm. Even if you are the primary breadwinner in your family, money coming into your family is an energy that is supporting your entire family. And so you have the belief that because I make it, I make the decisions, then you are creating, you're planting the seed to a problem that will show up later.
Mm-hmm.
Because anything that's in your family, food, money, kids, that's an energy in your relationship. And you got to decide, am I in a relationship where the energy is both of ours or is not? And I can tell you that anytime you're withholding any sort of energy from the other person, then you are allowing some atrophy to happen. And it just depends how much fun you think it is to deal with atrophy. So
what do you mean by that?
Well, the consequences always grow. So you plant the seed and you think, well, like, it's fine. It's fine. It's just a little nuisance, or she's only miffed a little bit, or he's, you know, angry just once in a while. Mm-hmm. Seeds grow, and they grow underground before you start seeing a little sprout. And it depends. You don't know what point of life you're going to be in when that sprout starts to show. You might be in the middle of like the busiest time of your business and the sprout shows, and then you're ignoring that it becomes a tree, you know? Mm-hmm. And so at some point you're going to have to deal with the resentment, whether it's in your relationships or your children are having some major problems because they feel like they've been ignored, withheld the energy of your love and affection. So,
so give a real life example, whether it would be with us or somebody you knew, like, or a client or something like that, where they let it grow and fester, or they didn't address it, right, and it just blew up.
Well, I'm trying to think which stories I could share while still honoring their privacy.
You know? You don't say their name, of course.
I know, but no identifying. So I'll speak in vagueness, if that's okay.
Sure.
So, gosh, I've seen it in so many ways. Okay, so one of the ways, and the first one that comes to my mind, is when one of the spouses was so embroiled in their business that they started to become feeling like that's the way that they felt validation in their life. And so naturally, the human brain's designed that they will go to the quickest activity that gives them the feedback they want. So he kept going into his business. And meanwhile,
that's where the accolades were and the respect.
Yeah, the right? Accolades and respect. Meanwhile, children were growing up in their family and everything seemed fine because they looked like good kids. But as they started to develop older and older, they resented the fact that their parent wasn't there. Mm. And so the problem manifested almost too late to do anything about it. There was suicide attempts, there was drug use, there was criminal activity, and it was too late. So there we go as a seed where you're denying the energy of your attention, right?
Yeah.
And the problem gets bigger.
It didn't just ruin the marriage, it actually ruined the family.
The family.
Yeah.
And even there's still consequences today.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that has happened even just health-wise. When you just put so much effort into something and your health or somebody else's health goes down or self-esteem. So I'm thinking of another where they were both afraid of looking at the money, but then the wife took the courage and said, okay, Adisa, if you'll show me how to look at the money without me having a panic attack every time, I'm open to it.
Yeah.
And so eventually she did, and she tried to enroll her husband into that, which he had been shrinking from it. And it turned out that because he had been shrinking from it so much that his confidence level in regards to money was gone. And so he's still working on this. He still is like, well, you deal with it. You're smarter than I am, you know? And he's actually a very skilled, intelligent guy. But the longer, so it's like one of my nieces broke her leg. And she came over to our house, I think last week, and she was still on crutches. And my sister was so upset. She's like, the doctor says she should not even be on crutches anymore. But she's just got so used to the crutches, like afraid of hurting her leg, that she just keeps staying on crutches. She will not walk on her foot at all.
Which won't strengthen the leg or heal it.
No. Yeah. And the longer she does it, the more fear she's going to develop over hurting her body. Even if her mom took away the crutches, hit him, or the scooter, or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's that fear. The longer you're away from it, the more that fear grows in your mind. And that's in money, relationships, anything. But
yeah.
I don't even know if I answered your question.
Yeah. No, some good stuff. Absolutely. Okay. So there's that atrophy, like you're saying. There's that atrophy that can happen, especially if we aren't working together. You know, if somebody backs off, that actually creates less and less confidence as time goes on.
Yeah. Too. But there's the other swing of the pendulum where sometimes people go, we're going to be partners and we're going to do the money together. Let's sit together and do the whole money together. You can't do that either. You almost have to say, like, you be in charge of this. If you'll be in charge of this, can I be in charge of that?
Sure.
And then we can come together once a week or once a month and compare notes and see how it's all jiving together.
Yeah.
You know, you really have to draw this is so cliche, but you really have to talk with each other.
Makes sense.
What do you expect?
Yeah.
What do you want? I think I was lucky that, so this is not our first marriage, mm-hmm. But in my first marriage, somebody gave me a book. It was called Love and Money, and I don't remember the names of the authors. I have the book still, but I don't even know if they still publish it. Mm-hmm. But it was basically opened my mind to realizing when I enter a union, I have my own personal money experiences and my own fears and my own successes and what works for me. Well, sometimes we forget that the other person mm-hmm. has gone through their own money experiences.
Yeah, their own past and upbringing.
Their fears, yeah. Yes, everything. Even cultures, even if there was no money trauma in any relationship, mm-hmm. you come up with the culture of how things are dealt with, and so does the other person. The cultures are different, and it's when you start trying to bring those together that the clashes happen. It's mm-hmm. a culture war. It's not really a money war.
Yeah. So I want to keep going on this one. I know we're on extra time, but I hope you guys are getting a lot of value from this because we're now going on a half hour, which is like a record for the show.
Well, shouldn't we like cut it and then just have another episode?
We might have to have part two.
Because people will be like, oh, it's 45 minutes long.
No, I don't think it's going to be much longer. But okay. I want to talk about a conversation we had just this last week. We're trying to create rules, some different rules that you can go by. Because when you're emotional, the problem is that when you have emotions coming up, rules go out the door. Right. Or if you don't have a good rule, if you just have kind of like little general guidelines.
If you haven't developed a habit.
If you haven't developed a habit, mm-hmm. they go out the door. So you got to create rules mm-hmm. of engagement so that when that emotional time comes up, just like in the military, right? Mm-hmm. Emotional time comes up, you're willing to engage and follow that pattern, right? Well, with us, we're talking about, well, what do we do if I want to do an investment and you don't? Or vice versa, you want to do an investment and maybe I don't. So we can't agree, right?
Yeah.
Because I get that question from a lot of my clients saying, hey, we're trying to agree on something, but mm-hmm. you know, I'm all ready to do this, but my spouse is not on board yet.
Yeah.
What do you suggest? What was some of the conversation we had about that?
I don't know if this would work. Like, this is what we did. Okay. Mm-hmm. I will say that instead of saying, this is my advice.
Yeah.
So for me was, what happens, Chris, when you don't agree with something I want to invest in, mm-hmm. right? Because when I don't want to invest in something, you kind of just say, no. Right? That was uh-huh. the case
yeah.
before.
It's like, I want to do it anyways.
Yes. And it says, so what happens when you don't want to do what I want to do? I still have to express my mm-hmm. creativity, which with me, it's partly it's money and mm-hmm. investments. And so what do we do with that? And so I think we came up for us, it's like, if you want to invest X amount of money into a certain investment, then there's nothing that says I shouldn't get X amount of money to invest in that.
Yeah.
Well, then if there's not enough for both of us to have that X amount, then we got to take the Y amount that we have and split it up
yep.
by two and say, okay, well, I feel about investing this much. And so we both have that amount.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean that I'm just going to be like, ooh, Vegas, I feel lucky. And I just go to invest.
Yeah.
And so at the roulette wheel, but it's like, we talk about it and think about it and go, I really want to be a good steward of this
mm-hmm.
because obviously you want to develop trust with your spouse, mm-hmm. right? But I even gave the example, if I screw up or if you screw up, it doesn't mean that later we don't get to invest again. It's mm-hmm. that anytime we want to invest, if we invest together, right? Mm-hmm. For most of the time, we agree on the things,
mm-hmm.
but sometimes we feel a little differently, like, well, I kind of want to do it this way or I want to go invest in that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're not talking about living separate lives. We're talking about acknowledging that when you get married, you are two separate beings and you do things together, but it doesn't let go of your identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. I agree. Well, and I think it's important too that you kind of alluded to, but didn't mm-hmm. quite say is we still talk about it before.
Yeah.
You're like, no, yeah. like it. So, because most of the time I see with couples is that one person might've done the research while the other one's still trying to catch up.
Yeah.
Right. And they just don't understand it. So trying to communicate that on the same level. Sometimes it does help to have a third party. It's like, you know what?
Explain it.
Yeah, explain yeah. it. Like, because there's times that, you know, I'll try to explain things to her. And once you go past 5 seconds, she's tuned out, right? But if I put her with somebody else, she'll give them way more time and attention. You know it's true.
It's because of the style of speaking. Sometimes it's hard. But I think every couple has similar experiences.
Right. So it's much better sometimes to get the third party involved to say, hey, can you help describe this, you know, so we can, you know, get on the same page here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, even after that, you've done all the research, you may not agree still, or
yeah.
you might just say, you know, I've got some reservations, and that's where this situation comes up with, mm-hmm. okay, well, if I decide to do this, that means you have just as much right to that money because it's our money.
Yeah.
It's so many people's like, well, this is mine and this is hers. Yeah. We have separate checking accounts and that kind of thing, which creates all kinds of mess. You know, there is some good to have separate checking accounts.
There like, is.
You give me a little spending, you know, amount.
I do.
I get a couple hundred bucks a month. I can spend on me.
When he's a good boy.
You know?
So.
Yep, that's fine.
I think that's the difference. So maybe we should say that. The thing is, there's so many topics in this podcast, and I feel like it's too long. But maybe we'll just touch on it and go deeper in it later.
Mm-hmm.
That we're not saying if you have separate checking accounts, you're horrible, and if you can only have one that's together. We have our household account, and that's the main account
that
we both work together on.
Mm-hmm.
But then we have our separate business accounts, but then we also have our separate personal accounts that we take from the household and go, here's how much you can use without having to report every little thing you buy, mm-hmm. right? But the majority of it is a union, because that's what we're trying to create, is a union, you know? I've had so many people, they've been clients, they've been hairdressers, they've been friends that have separate bank accounts. And they said, oh, yeah, it works fine. The more they talk, the more it comes up that they don't feel like it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But because they're trying to accommodate the other person,
right?
They try to convince themselves it's fine, but it's not. They need more unity. And I see them separate, or have seen them separate, more than just money.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, grow together. You don't have to agree on everything. There's concessions. Nothing's black and white. There's mm-hmm. more freedom than you think when it comes to money. There's more variations than people think.
Yeah.
And you can create something that works just for you. You customize it.
You make it yours.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a cookie cutter like the way that we do it or anything like that. It's just doing what works for you. That's what really matters.
And change when it needs to change.
Yeah. And it will. It'll have to change and evolve over time. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if people want to follow you, Adise Boucher, don't even follow me.
It's when Twitter used to have those. Was it Twitter that says so and so is following you? And I'm like, that sounds creepy.
It's creepy.
I don't know if they still have that, but anyway.
So how would they follow you? Like, what's the best way they can find your stuff? Because I know there's people like, I want to follow more Adise Boucher
yes,
stuff.
Yes, I know.
Chris isn't cool, but I love Adise.
Yeah, I know. But the premiere is not ready. So no. So right now I've been just redesigning who I serve and how I serve, so that I can serve better longer without mm-hmm. like petering out because everybody wants me. Which sounds like egotistical, but that's what happens.
Basically, do not ask her to coach you.
Don't ask yet, okay?
Not yet.
Yeah. Yeah, let me finish some books and then we'll talk, okay? But for right now, just go to newmoneymama.com. Newmoney, M-A-M-A.com. And when I feel like it, I will send out notifications. And when I have the blog reset up, then I'll just put all my old stuff on there. So
she won't do anything unless she feels like it.
Pretty mm-hmm. much. Yeah, yep. Pretty much. I just feel like when I'm happier, I'm more prosperous. And I have found that when I'm doing what I like, people mm-hmm. like me doing it. And so then the requests come faster than I was ready to honor all of them. So does that make sense?
So in the meantime, back off. But follow her.
Yeah, no.
Just kidding.
It's just do whatever you feel called to do.
Yeah,
just do whatever. Absolutely. So.
Well, I appreciate you being on here. I know you're a busy mom, and I know you're amazing. You're mm-hmm. a wonderful woman.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom, because I know they appreciate it a lot. So, guys, I hope this made episode 500 special for you guys. I hope you make a wonderful and prosperous week. See you around.
Visit us online at moneyripples.com for more resources to help you fix money leaks and get your money working harder for you now.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere. This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.